Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisory firm. Price Financial Group has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investment and retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations may vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial program with a certified financial planner, estate planning attorney, and a certified public accountant to answer your questions for free. Got a tough estate, tax, or financial problem keeping you up at night? You can call the show right now at 503-222-9700. That's 503-222-9700. Long distance and podcast listeners can call toll free at 800-344-5836. Coming to you live from Portland, Oregon, and broadcast on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
We do Investing Simplified.
Welcome into Investing Simplified. However you may be listening, thank you for making us a part of your day. I'm Bo Caldwell, CFP, here with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. And for the second week in a row, with me in studio is Matt May, Chief Investment Officer of Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Hey, Matt, how's it going today?
Doing well, Bo. How about yourself?
Well, you know, it's another day, another 25 cents, as a lot of clients like to say. You know, I've had some questions that have come up, Matt, from clients that they heard us talk last week about, hey, that sounds great. This is what you see has happened in the market to start, you know, the year. This is what, you know, where it's bounced back these way super fast times up and down. But that's great. Now, where to go from here? What do we do now? What opportunities are we seeing out there? What should, you know, I listened, right? I said, hey, I'm going to keep some dry powder on the sidelines. And I've moved to my risk tolerance. Now, what opportunities are we seeing?
I think it's important to look backwards to look forwards. And what I mean by that is just study historical trends. When we go back to 2007, October, that was the prior all-time high in the stock market. The markets have gone higher and higher during the mid-2000s, and then we faced the largest drop since the Great Depression. If we were to be the worst timers in our life, in our probably our parents' lifetimes, the worst time to buy was October of 2007.
Okay.
If we did that, if we put our life savings all in the stock market in October of 2007, today we'd be more than double our money.
Right. Wow. The worst time. So the
worst time in history.
If you bought it right before the market went down in the Great Recession or whatever, you know, financial crisis, whatever terminology you want to use
right.
for what happened, you know, during that time. So you put all my life savings and I said, I bought an S&P. I went to Vanguard and I said, hey, give me the S&P 500 fund. I want low cost. I just want to track the market. It's going gangbusters, which a lot of times happens, right? When the market is extended, when the market seems to be turning around, most people that have been sitting on the sidelines now think, oh, I got to get in. I got to buy. It's going up.
Amazon's up 80%. I got to get me some of that.
I got to buy some of that.
So, you know, historically speaking, that was a terrible time in the first 5 years to be invested because it took you nearly 5 years to get back to break even.
Right.
And at one point, if you own the S&P 500, you were down 53%. Half
right.
of your money is gone. But you held on long term. You had to go through a pretty big roller coaster. Here you are 11 years later with dividends reinvested. You're well over double your money.
Wow.
The Dow had reached, I think, somewhere down to 6,600 in that time frame, and it climbed above 29,000. So, you know, if we were fortunate to have, you know, earnings still coming in and reinvesting like in a 401k or a Roth or an IRA or any brokerage account, something like that, if you were able to add some money all through there, you're well above that. You know, if you could get some money invested March 09, the markets are up huge from there, 6,600 to nearly 30,000
wow.
in the Dow. So, I just take that with a grain of salt when I think about what the opportunities are now. I think the opportunities for us involve time. And some investors out there might say, Matt, I don't really have really an 11-year time frame to be doubling my money or to making my money grow. Maybe my time frame is a little bit shorter. So it's really a tale of two different stories here. I think time needs to be on our side for some of these strategies. And if time isn't on your side, then we have to rethink that. And I'll kind of cover both worlds. So what I'm seeing now as far as those longer time horizons, looking back at the last 10 years, I think one of the biggest stark differences between the markets out there is what has happened in the U.S. and what has happened pretty much everywhere else.
Sure.
So in the U.S., I look at the SPY. That's an ETF, SPY, SPY, we call it. That's a S&P 500 ETF. And that has gained about 230%, 224% in the last decade from 10 years back. 224% increase in the U.S. stock market, S&P 500. Its international component, the international counterpart, is down. It's actually negative.
Wow. Over that same time.
So over that same time.
Trailing. When you talk about international, generally speaking, you may hear this terminology. You may hear, you know, something, something ex-US, right? Something that tracks a world index or tracks something. And when you hear ex-US, that means it's, you know, a world index that is excluding the US, right? So that's what we're talking. Maybe the MSCI
World Index. The one I was using is particularly the EFA, International Large Value. Okay. That's ticker symbol EFV, is an Echo Foxtrot Victor. So looking at that index over the last decade, it's down 11%, not counting any dividends that might be reinvested.
Sure, sure.
So just no dividends counted there. So if we're down 11% in the international value area, that if we look at the dividend that it pays, it's paying a 3.6% dividend yield.
Wow, that's pretty good. That's better than the 0.9% we were talking about in my cash account.
Right. S&P 500 is paying 1.85%.
Okay.
So S&P 500 looks expensive. And when I say expensive, historically, like we talked about last week, the U.S. market is trading at levels we haven't seen since the dot-com bust 20 years ago.
Right.
So the international world has basically gone slightly backwards or flat for the last decade. And typically what you see is leaders tend to rotate.
Sure.
If you've had a strong period of international companies lagging and the U.S. really dominating as we have, typically at some point there's some dynamic shift that makes that switch. And it usually doesn't, it's usually not a short-term shift. We saw 2017 as a good example of just a short-term shift, but normally when that trend changes, it's a 3 to 5 year trend.
So basically, and again, the caveat that I have to throw in there every time is this is not specific advice to go out and say, well, I heard these yahoos on the radio say, go out and buy international value. And so I went out and did it. That, you know, the caveat always comes, you know, with make sure you're discussing this with your financial professional. If you'd like to discuss it with us, give us a call. But make sure you are talking to a professional or you are analyzing your own situation, because this is our analysis for what we're looking at for our portfolios that we're managing, not necessarily for yours. So make sure that you're analyzing that and taking what Matt is saying, you know, just as information to go research and find out more yourself. But it's something you may not have looked into. You know, and Matt, I've heard and correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding with some of that is that, you know, generally speaking, historically speaking, and we talk about looking to the past for the future because, you know, the adage is history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme, right? So it does have very similar, outlooks. And if we're looking at what has happened historically when the ex-US or that EFA index, you know, when these international, particularly Europe, and EFA stands for Europe, Asia, and Far East, right?
Australasia, and the Far East.
Australasia, so it includes Australia.
It's a big word.
Don't want to leave Australians out of there. But so if we're talking about these countries that have statistically and traditionally, when they are falling behind the U.S., when we have led, then there tends to be a rotation where they outpace. And that doesn't mean we're saying that the U.S. economy is not going to continue growing. What we're saying is that traditionally, as we rotate out of U.S. being the leader, maybe the EFA, the Euro Australasia.
Euro Australasia.
Yeah,
Euro Australasia.
Yeah. We can't even say it. It's difficult.
Ural-Australasia and the Far East. Ural-Australasia and the Far East.
Say that five times fast.
You can't.
EFA.
As, you know, E-A-F-E.
That EFA may be an opportunity, you know, in the coming years. And that doesn't mean tomorrow, folks. It doesn't mean that it's going to rotate out, you know, next week. But that may be an opportunity if you have a long time horizon to look at, to explore.
Absolutely. And again, it's not, we're talking 100% of your money going into this thing. It would be a slice of the pie.
A sleeve of in there, yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, time horizon, risk tolerance, your overall financial objectives determine how big that pie slice should be, if at all.
Right, right. So what about gold and silver, Matt? You know, I hear a lot of people asking me about, you know, what are your thoughts on, you know, should we, we've got, you know, an election coming up, we've got, you know, that we've got, you know, unmitigated social unrest that's happening in this country. So a lot of people are kind of worried that, hey, you know, the dollar is going to devalue, which, by the way, folks, if the dollar does get devalued, that investment he just talked about, international exposure, is going to be helped, right?
Absolutely. I think comparative to foreign currencies, we've seen the Japanese yen devalue, the Chinese yuan has devalued, the euro has been devalued historically over the last 5 to 7 years. I went to Europe probably 6 years ago, and it was about $1.42 per euro, and now recently I saw like $1.16 per euro. It means our U.S. dollar can buy more now,
right,
overseas. Same thing with investments. Your stronger U.S. dollar will buy more international investments, and if we see that trend shift, the U.S. dollar weakens against that currency, which strengthens the underlying investment. Those companies overseas don't really have to grow. It's just the currency shift that caused you to make money.
Right. And so, you know, alternatively, if you're buying those, to think about that from an experience of buying low, selling high, right? We're buying more of those companies. And then even if they don't grow or get worth more in their currency, it's worth more dollars if the dollar goes down in value, right? So my $100 buys 100, you know, 100, you know, buys 100, let's say they're equal, buys 100 euros worth of, you know, of what we're buying over there. But if then the dollar, just for easy math, it's not going to probably happen, but let's say that now dollar's worth half of what the euro is, I have 100 euros worth of, you know, of items over there, that ostensibly buys $200 worth. I might just doubled my, you know, my investment. Now, again, that's just easy math.
Easy math, right. But I think currency shifts can be a powerful trend. Some may say that COVID struck the international world first, so, you know, like Italy and some other
Spain
areas,
and
they're kind
the
of
UK, yeah,
dealt with it and are emerging before we are fully. There's some argument to be made there, but those are more short-term looks at the market, not
sure.
Long-term.
Sure,
I try to focus on those long-term trends, those, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 year long trends or longer.
Right.
I really think that there's a big gap between U.S. and international investments. And I think that that's an opportunity. As far as gold and silver, like we were talking about, the currency, if the U.S. dollar does weaken, it helps that as well. And people say, wow, Matt, gold and silver, they're up just
insane,
so much more this
yeah.
year than the U.S. stock
yeah,
market.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true. If we go back to the all-time highs in gold, that was quite a while ago, a decade ago. So it's just now breaking into all-time highs, whereas the stock market got into all-time highs in 2012.
Right, and so then again in 2020, and then again in 2020.
Again and again and again. When is it going to stop? When the music stops, I don't know. But gold is just now emerging into its all-time high, whereas the U.S. stock market has been there for 8 years and counting. So I would say that in and itself should be looked at as future values to be made there. I still think that there's some value in precious metals. Again, not the 100%, oh, you told me
right.
to buy gold.
Right. And
put it in my safe.
Well, and honestly, when we talk about gold and silver, and I've gotten this question a lot, generally speaking, folks, we're talking about investing in them, not buying the bullion or buying the bars, because I don't see any situation. I've had some questions that have come in, and before we take our break here, I just want to cover that too. I've had questions that have come in from folks that are getting emails or they're getting solicited to buy gold. And the hard part about when you buy physical gold, rather than buying it on an exchange where, you know, something that tracks the spot price of gold. And just so you know, SLV and GLD, which are the ETFs that we generally, you know, look at the most for those are backed by actual physical metal.
So they have it all stored in a vault.
Yeah, so it's not like you're not getting that portion of it, but there's
you just don't have the combination to the vault.
Yeah, right. But there's no situation that I can foresee that you're going to be able to go down to Safeway and shave off a shaving of gold to pay for bread, right? So if you're buying the physical gold, that's okay. I'm not opposed to that. But if you're looking to invest, I think the best way to invest is to buy those ETFs that track the spot price because, or funds that track the spot price, because the physical gold, you're going to have to pay a commission on both ends, right? So it just doesn't really help you.
Absolutely. And I know that this is kind of silly, but I have a friend, a client that had a lot of silver and quite a bit of gold, and he's owned it for a long time, and it sat there and did nothing while the markets kept going higher and higher. And then, of course, after this year, it's like it went gangbusters and he wanted to sell it. He's taking duffel bags that are 60, 70 pounds of silver into this thing, into the place where he's exchanging, and it, like he's breaking duffel bags trying to carry that stuff around. It's kind of funny and silly, but I mean, it's quite a bit of effort to store that. I mean, it's like you got to go, where do you can put it in a safe. There's some issues perhaps being able to store gold in a safety deposit box at the bank. There's ever since we came off the gold standard, that could be an issue, but it's still, it weighs a lot. So where do you put it? Where do you store it?
Yeah, and not that we're not prejudging it can be a good investment. When we talk about gold and silver from our perspective, it's not the physical bullion. It is those ETFs that track that price. Now, they can be volatile, right?
So absolutely.
You know, approach it with caution as you do any sort of investment as part of your overall investment plan and your overall portfolio. So I think it's a good place to take a break here. But if you have a question, you know, about gold and silver, about your investments, about opportunities that we are seeing for our clients, make sure you send it to askbo@pfgwm.com. We want to answer those questions. Or if you'd like, you can leave it at investingsimplifiedradio.com. We want to make sure we're bringing you the content that's applicable to you guys. We can sit and chat for hours on end about these things because we geek out on it. But we want to make sure that it's stuff that applies to you guys. So we'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back into Investing Simplified. If you're just now joining us, thank you for doing so. Thank you for tuning in as we broadcast to you live here from Portland, Oregon. We're coming at you with, you know, what we think is the most applicable, you know, information for you. And we want to make sure we're covering what you want to hear. So send in your question to askbo@pfgwm.com or drop your question at investingsimplifiedradio.com. As a reminder, you can get replays of our show. If you can't catch it here live on the radio station, you can get a replay via podcast. It's on our website at pfgwm.com. Feel free to visit there. We post the shows every week. There's also a lot of great content that you can go on there, and there's no obligation against free content. We're trying to get information out to you guys. And one of the things that has come up, the questions that we've had come in, and I think it's a really good one, Matt, is we have a question that came in. A lady is looking at doing what's called a SPIA, or a single premium immediate annuity, in order to fund.
You said the A word.
Oh, I said the A word. Yeah, no, folks have heard that. Yeah, the annuity A word. Yeah, we've talked about the A word on here before. But this single premium immediate annuity to fund a permanent life insurance policy, and whether that can be a good idea or not. And you know, for me, if you're already allocating funds to buy that life insurance policy, you've got, you know, annual payments for the next 5 years that you're going to buy this, you know, you buy this life insurance policy and you got the cash sitting on the sidelines. We've talked about there's not a good short term. We were talking long term, right? Long term, here's the opportunities we see. But what are the short term ops? There's not really good ones. And we talked about we need to have this money allocated. So we can't put it at risk, right? Because we don't want it to go down.
That's the real point of the matter for the shorter term time horizons. And they call it TINA. There is no alternative. So you've got all-time high stock markets. You've got all-time low rates for the most part. I mean, they're just abysmally low. Cash is paying you virtually nothing. So where do you go to earn income without taking on an exorbitant amount of risk? I mean, for the 2-3 year time frame, it's really, really difficult.
Really
tough.
That's
why there's so much money going back into the stock market as well. One, there's, of course, trillions of dollars of stimulus. That's a lot of money. Right, that's right. A lot of zeros. And that's pushed things up. There's also no alternative. You don't want to sit in cash and earn nothing. And
right.
Interest rates are so low that people are buying stocks. Like, I could at least get 1.85% yield
in on the S&P.
On right. the S&P and ride, you know, hopefully not
and hopefully
ride
it keeps going
roller
up,
coaster.
Right? Hopefully it keeps going up. But if right. you're not willing to take that chance that it's right. going to go up, right, we need... I'm going to use easy math because...
We got to think outside the box.
Right. You're thinking outside the box. Use easy math for this, right, where this listener sent in her question about buying this policy. So if you have a 5-year pay plan or a 10-year, let's say it's going to pay for 10 years, right, you have to allocate $1,000 a year for the next 10 years to buy this insurance policy. You have $10,000. You can't really put, even though we have 10 years, we can't put it at risk because we don't know if this 10 years is going to be like the 10 years that ended 2007. We just talked about, 2008, the worst 10-year, you know, if you were talking about a lost decade or the worst time to invest. I can't, even though I'm getting 1.8% yield, I can't take the risk that it goes down when I need to make these payments.
Right.
So what happens, folks, is the insurance company will offer what's called a SPIA or a single premium immediate annuity. You've heard me say, I don't like annuitizing. I don't want to turn your income into a stream of income that we can only get X amount of dollars out because the insurance company wins. But in this case, if we're taking that $10,000 that you've allocated towards buying this life insurance policy, and we can buy a 10-year single premium immediate annuity, maybe we could get 2-3% on that money, which isn't much, right? 10 grand, 2-3% is a couple $100. It's not great, right? But that's a couple $100 that we couldn't get before. So maybe we can buy that life insurance policy, and instead of having to spend 10 grand on it, we only have to spend $9,600. Not a huge savings, but that's a savings nonetheless. And if it's a guaranteed product that you are already allocating to this life insurance policy, I think it can be a great bet.
Right. So with that 10-year single premium immediate annuity, you're dropping one using one purchase to buy a 10-year income stream. And that income stream then funds a whole life insurance policy. So 1 year after another, that annuity is paying the premium for you. You just paid one premium to the SPIA, and then that SPIA then pays into the whole life policy. Okay, let's think about how that wouldn't work or try to derail it. Say we're 3 years in and the worst happens. We're no longer around.
Right, pass away, yeah.
Whole life policy pays the death benefit.
Right.
And you still have 7 more years of income that the SPIA payouts. Yeah. So no more premium on the whole life policy, and somebody, your beneficiary that you name, gets the other 7 years worth of guaranteed income payments.
Right. Right. And then, you know, the alternatives that you decide you don't want the insurance policy anymore. You know, the hard part about utilizing those, you know, that steady stream of income, I mentioned the numbers, right? $10,000, we're only really saving $400 or $500. Okay, great. Woohoo, right? Okay, we're saving $400 or $500. But the other part about it, and this gets really deeply into everybody's favorite conversation, which is life insurance, right? But when you're looking at a whole life policy or a permanent policy like that, there is a test for what's called a MEC or a modified endowment contract. And you want to make sure that you don't have a MEC when you're using an insurance policy, unless you're purposely doing that, which we can get into on a one-off basis or on another show. But the way that SPIA does is lets you take that 10 grand. Like you said, you've got that 10 grand now. You can't put it all in at once, or it becomes what's called a MEC. It fails the seven pay test. If there's a bunch of, we don't have to get into the weeds with it.
Just know it's bad. It's not tax favorable.
It's not good. It's a tax headache. It's a bad thing if you get a MEC. So this you know, keeps you from doing that. We've allocated that money. You're not going to go spend it because, you know, now we're in COVID and now you want a boat to go out and, you know, fishing because you're not allowed to see people, right? So you're not spending it on other
stuff.
Also
true.
Yeah, right. I'm speaking possibly from experience, but, you know,
asking for a friend.
But if you're looking at utilizing it, it can be a really good deal, right? It can, you, like you said, let's blow it up. You pass away a couple years in, you're not going to get less than you put in, plus the life insurance that you were already buying can be the right call.
And generally, if you're buying a, if you're using $1,000 a year to buy a life insurance premium, it's going to pay you more than a $10,000 death benefit likely. So your internal rate of return on a situation like that, if you're only around for a couple of years, is monstrous.
It's pretty spectacularly good. Not
that you care, but the ones that you love, or maybe it's a charitable cause or something like that, whoever you've designated as your beneficiary, while they're sad that you're gone,
at least they have the peace of mind. That's what you bought the insurance for, right? But right. So let's talk about kind of situationally, if you are talking short-term money, right? Other than, you know, we talked about cash or what else is out there from a rate perspective, right? And generally speaking, where we end up going is what's called a multi-year guaranteed annuity, right? And that's an insurance product that's similar to a CD. It's not a CD because it's not FDIC insured, but it's a similar product that defers that compound interest if mm-hmm. you're talking about taxable money. But again, the rates aren't great. You're not getting great rates, but better than you could elsewise right now, right?
I think if you're looking at, again, that rate of inflation, last I looked, I think yesterday or day before, this year we're coming in at about 1.05% for inflation.
Right.
So if we can beat 1.05%, then we're ahead of the game on our conservative assets. So the multi-year guaranteed annuities, or MIGAs as we call them, I think that we're seeing, what, 2.25%?
Two and a quarter, 2.5 for a 3-year deal. Yeah, yeah.
And there's the gotcha, the time frame that you have to tie your money up.
Right, right.
So 3 years, in our opinion, it's longer than being able to go up to the bank and pull your money out. But leaving your money in the bank, we're getting 0.05% or right. worse in a lot right. of cases. Some people have high interest savings accounts. And Bo mentioned previously a couple of weeks back about the looking online for rates. I'm thinking I saw a 1.1 out there.
I think 0.9 is yeah. right around 1%. Yeah,
and that's with various companies, FDIC insured. That's nice, but the MIGAs offer a, you know, potentially higher interest rate, mm-hmm. and we do have to tie the money up for 3 years.
It's like a CD, right? Yeah, when mm-hmm. you're looking at the longer you go, the better rate you get. And that's kind of that sweet spot where we end up with folks that have money that, if you're looking at this money and you're looking at the markets at all-time highs, I really just can't afford to lose this money. I just, you know, in 2%, 3% compound interest, while it's crazy that we're getting excited about that because that's the interest rate environment we live in.
You're blowing my mind with your 2.25%.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy that that's the environment that we're in, but that is what's out there right now. And those can be a good portion. You know, they can be a sleeve. We talk about this all the time, and you'll hear Matt and I talk about it when we talk about investing. That's, it could be a good slice of the pie for your conservative dollars, right? It has no risk. It does, you know, because it's guaranteed by that insurance company, and then to a certain extent, up to a certain dollar amount, is guaranteed by the state insurance commission. That's compound interest, right? I mean, 2%, 3% compound interest adds up over time, and we're beating inflation. It's not exciting. It's not sexy. It's not great, but it, you know, what it will do is it's not going to lose money.
And I really feel for the either soon to be retirees or just retired within the last 3 to 5 years, or even folks that have been in retirement for 5 years or longer, 5, 10, 15 years. The interest rates are so low. How are you supposed to safely turn your portfolio into a decent income stream? It has been said, modern economists used to say that it was a safe withdrawal rate was about 4%. Take your total portfolio value and you could pull out 4% safely for the rest of your life and never run out of money. Now they're saying that rate is closer to 2.8% because right. A, rates are low, and B, the stock market is, you know, at all-time highs. Imagine being at the top of Mount Everest. Over the last 10 years, we've climbed to all-time highs. Do we expect the next 10 years to be another Mount Everest to see, you know, 12, 13% average gains per year? It's probably going to go back towards, it's the long-term averages are probably going to go back towards average, which is around, you know, 6 to 8%.
Right.
But if we've been getting double digits and we're going to average down to 8, that means there's going to be some, you know, tough years, some low return years. We have to prepare that, prepare ourselves for that lower expected rate of return over the next decade.
Yeah. And we've talked about that a lot. If you're approaching your retirement, if you're kicking the tires on, can I retire? Do I have enough money? And you want that complimentary review. You want us to review your portfolio, tell you what we think, how we can get you there, and the different ways. And sometimes, honestly, folks, it's a hard conversation to have, but sometimes that means you just got to save more, you got to work longer. But it's nice to know. It's nice to have that review. We're happy to do that, again, on a complimentary basis. Give us a call, 503-253-3000. We're happy to sit down with you. Matt, myself, we work as a team. That's why we talked about having that team concept. We review every client's situation all together to make sure that we get you on the right path. Now, we're going to take a break here, come back with Taylor Cattell again this week for Cover Your Assets. We've got some questions that have come in from listeners about your estate planning, some questions that you might have that are keeping you up at night. Make sure you send those to askbo@pfgwm.com. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Legal matters are never easy, but they are especially difficult when they involve the most important people and aspects of your life. This is Taylor Cattell, founding partner of KG Law Group. It's important to have an attorney who cares about your unique circumstances and knows how to get the outcome that is best for you. At KG Law Group, we specialize in estate planning and family law, including wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, and divorce. At KG Law Group, we provide both expertise and compassion as we guide you through the complex legal landscape. We balance knowledge of the law with exemplary client service. Whether you're reacting to a crisis or planning for the future, we are here to help. If you need legal advice, give us a call today and schedule a consultation at 503-878-8948. That's 878-8948. Or visit us online at kglawgroup.com. That's kglawgroup.com, serving Oregon and Southwest Washington. KG Law Group, your family, your legacy.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
And welcome back into Investing Simplified. This is Cover Your Assets with Taylor Cattell. Joining us again with her, what do we call her? Your lovely assistant,
my very noisy coworker.
Your attorney in training with her big with her big blue eyes. Is Maya Cattell is also joining us. So if you have a question for Maya, make sure you send that in. I'm sure she would love to drool all over your question.
She is 5 months old now, so she can hold her own.
Well, I mean, that's well on her way to a college degree, right? I mean, she's about finished with the college. She's looking postgraduate now. Maybe not. Sorry.
All right. We're holding our hopes.
So, Taylor, we had a question come in, and it actually came in a few weeks ago, but we haven't been able to get to it. But it's regarding the SECURE Act, which I know a lot of people are wondering about, as it is still recently passed legislation, 8 months ago or whatever. But so the question from Chuck says, I spent nearly $10,000 in 2019 finalizing my estate plan for a high seven-figure estate in Washington, parenthetically. With the passage of the SECURE Act, I know I need to go back and see my attorney, but what are the general principles I should be thinking about when restructuring the plan? And this is good because I think people need to be thinking about these, whether they're restructuring or structuring for the first time. But he says he has minor children, so the challenge is providing for them in trust now that the SECURE Act has blown up the stretch IRA. He said they are young, so he'd need a plan that lasts for 10 years. For all the disadvantages of leaving a 401k/IRA to a trust, there doesn't seem to be a good alternative when talking about minors. And he said, if it matters, parenthetically, the estate is roughly $3 million in life insurance proceeds, $1 million in real property, real estate, $1 million Roth, $2.5 million in investments, and $1.5 million in 401k assets. So significant. So we go 3, 4, 5. Another 4, so in about $9 million total estate, of which we have $1 million in Roth and $1.5 million in qualified money. The rest is non-qualified. So I know that was a lot of numbers to throw at you, but
Speaking, the good thing is only a few of them matter as far as the SECURE Act goes and the implications of the SECURE Act. And so what I would say is that, first off, when you have when you're aware of a legal change and you've revised your documents, it's always worth it to call your attorney and say, does this affect me? What do you recommend? With things like the Secure Act, you don't necessarily need to change your documents. It's just getting a sense of how you would coordinate the beneficiary designations on your retirement accounts to be in line with what you want and asking these questions of your attorney. So I wouldn't, if you've already spent $10,000 to get everything up to snuff, my hope and my guess is that you wouldn't be looking at doing that again. You're not rinse and repeat. You're not redoing all of the work that you've done. You're really just calling to top it off and say, hey, I heard about this change. How does it impact me based on all the information you already have? I don't charge my clients for those questions because it's really how do you fulfill all the things we've already done. And it's usually a 10 minute to a half an hour phone call, right? It's not a big time suck that ends up being a whole reworking of the documents. Most attorneys do charge for that time, but again, we're not talking hours and hours of the fees typically. There are some changes that will necessitate changing the boilerplate of your trust provisions, but that goes more towards should you name the trust or your kids directly or when and how for the assets that are affected by the Secure Act. So there's a lot of different reasons to have a trust for children. Most of those reasons haven't changed. So the only question is really the implication with regard to the income deferred retirement accounts. So it sounds like, what was the name of the person? Was it
Chuck, I believe.
So it sounds like Chuck has done his reading, he's done his research, he has some good ideas about the negative of the Secure Act when it comes to protecting assets for kids. I would agree. There's not a lot of good alternatives with the loss of the stretch. You're not going to get the same kind of have your cake and eat it too of the income tax deferral for the life expectancy of your kids. And that really has shifted how you want to prepare your legacy if you have the time looking forward doing more Roth conversions or other things that your financial advisor might recommend, depending on where you are in the retirement timeline and where you are in your ability to do that and all sorts of things you should talk to Bo or your financial advisor about to get a better sense of what's my strategy. I'm not the strategist. That's what Bo does. As the worst case scenario gal who says, if all these horrible things happen, then what? But with the Secure Act, really, it comes down to the strategy of not stockpiling as much in income tax deferred accounts when it comes to legacy planning. And really, how does that coordinate with everything else for your own income expectations and your own legacy planning? That's all Bo questions. So the Secure Act and the implications on the trust for kids, what I'm talking to my clients about is, do you want the assets to remain in trust past age 28? So Maya is 5 months old. Right now, if she were to receive anything upon my death, that would be problematic, not just because she's too young to manage money, but because they would get the courts involved. So we wouldn't want to deal with all of that. It's really heart-wrenching to see the fees and the policies that really don't work in favor of your kids during their minority. But the Secure Act, that 10-year payout, starts at the age of majority. So that's an important thing. If Maya were to receive assets now, it's not that she has to get them paid out when she's 10. She gets them paid out when she's 28. So that's an important piece. So depending on the age of the kids and how close they are to being the majority age, the next question would be, how late do you want to delay their receipt of the 401k? Is it past 28? Because if that's your highest priority, then it's probably best to keep them in the trust. But if you say, gosh, at age 28, they could get that portion that's the 401k, everything else could stay in trust later, but I'm comfortable with that, you may have some better income tax options to basically have an interest for a period of time, but then have it pay out to the beneficiary when they're 28.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I was going to say that stretch doesn't, you know, it applies still. So people know when you said the age of majority, when you get inherit an IRA, if you leave that to a minor child, they still get to stretch it out on an, you know, beneficiary RMD until it's age 18, right? Unless you stretch it out to age 28. Is that so? That my understanding was it was 18, but I guess you're talking about trust versus the RMD from the IRA, right?
And I'm thinking of the Secure Act's mandatory payout piece.
Oh, you're right. 10 years to 18, 28. Math is right. Hard for me, Taylor. You know.
so that's it's just when it is happening mm-hmm. out. And I'm not sure how it works with little kids. That would be a potentially Kevin question as far as what happens tax wise.
Right.
If you took Maya as an example, and you have somebody who's got a full 18 plus the 10, you know, 28 years. How would you handle that, and what are the tax consequences of that? Whether there's kiddie tax issues or other things related mm-hmm. to that. That's I'm not the income tax expert, so we could dog ear this for a Kevin day.
Yeah.
But more from an estate planning perspective, my question would be: Is 28 long enough? And sure. If 28 is not long enough for those assets specifically, then talk to your estate planner, but you may want to take the tax hit to keep it in trust longer, or you might be more beneficial to pay it out at or before 28, but keeping in mind that that's only that, what, $1.5 million of the 401k,
mm-hmm.
insurance, everything else, if properly directed to the trust, that's still going to be held in trust to whatever age you have set up.
Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And, you touched on one thing that I know listeners are going to get tired of hearing me say it, because I will continue to say it every week, particularly while tax rates are still currently at, historic lows, is to looking into ways to convert that, tax deferred money to Roth. And it sounds to me like Chuck has a lot of that money in 401k. And so he may or may not, he didn't specify his age. So I don't know if he's past the age to be able to do an in-service rollover to move that money into an IRA and then convert it to Roth. He might be making too much money right now to really want to convert, that much money to Roth at this particular point. But then it gets to the point of what are we deciding, right? In terms of what we're trying to move. And you mentioned the other thing that, people forget oftentimes about is being able to start Roth or do Roth contributions for children as long as they are earning money, right? So that's another thing that I've talked to people in that particular situation. If your kid is not Maya's age, obviously Maya's not making any money, but you've got a 15, 16-year-old who's working a summer job, not making a lot of money, but making $2,000-$3,000 in earned income. Right. Uh-huh. And they have to file a tax return. You can do a contribution. We're gifting that money to them to do a Roth contribution for them. But hypothetically, if that same child is working and has inherited this IRA, they could take a distribution, pay the taxes on it, and then use that money as a contribution to a Roth. Right. So they could get that money into the Roth. And like you said,
I like that. That's creative thinking, because you're also taking care of some gifting pieces, which gets it out of your estate.
Mm-hmm.
But also teaching your kids how to save.
Right.
That's a great role model to be starting so early to have the rest of their life to get that growth.
Right. Well, and in another, he's got a significant amount of life insurance, at least he specified. I don't know if that's term life insurance or permanent, but a lot of times what people will do too is take that money and do these Roth conversions. But maybe if they're not going to do a Roth conversion, start taking distributions, paying the tax and buying a policy on themselves, maybe in an ILIP, maybe in a, just in an insurance policy, but then building up a $1.5 million policy that and then leaving that IRA to a charity or to, in some way to get that out of your estate. So that way you're not hurting them. It's still in your estate with the insurance, but it's not taxable when the kids take the distributions. So there's a lot of different ways. So I think that, the gist of it, and we'll hopefully Chuck's listening, but we'll also respond to his email, that, the gist of it is to make what I heard, what I took away from it. I like to do that. I think it's a good way of distilling down because it's so ubiquitous to you. It's so easy, to you, but for those of us who don't think in those terms, the idea that things to think about is most of what he did is not blown up by the Secure Act, right? Like you said, most everything that you've done, as long as it's done properly, it sounds like it was, and he sounds like he knows what he's doing, that is still in place. So the tweaks to go in when he goes and meets with his attorney again really are just about that qualified money, which is a small portion, right, of the estate. So just, you know, just briefly, if you are having those questions, if you're struggling with those questions, or there's another thing that you think about like that, send it into askbo@pfgwm.com or visit investingsimplifiedradio.com. But if you have a more in-depth question that you don't want us airing your dirty laundry over the air, but you want to meet with Taylor, you can give her office a call. How do they get a hold of you, Taylor?
The best way is to call our office at 503-878-8948. You can find us online at kglawgroup.com, and our phone number is there, as well as an email address. And we'd be happy to answer some questions and see if there's any way we can help.
Perfect. And I, like I said, you know, I say this every week. I say this when I recommend people to Taylor. I, you know, nothing but the best. Everyone that I've sent her way has had nothing but just glowing reviews. And in fact, I wanted to share with you, you know, on the air, Taylor, I had a conversation with a young lady who said, you know, she's been kicking herself because she has heard you on the show, has listened and said, you know, I need to go see her, but never did. And then unfortunately has had a poor experience with her current estate attorney, but is, you know, has put enough money in that she's going to finish it out. But she has kicked herself since not setting up with you. I promise you folks, I have not had that as a response or as a review of KG Law Group. So if you've been thinking about it, if you kicked yourself, if you are like several of my clients who will remain nameless, but they know who they are, who have been talking about going and seeing Taylor for, you know, for a while now, now's not, there's never been a better time. Give her office a call. We have an office over here in Bethany that you can meet her and her team at. I know you guys do virtual and over the phone meetings as well. So
we do. And if you have a meeting with Bo that's already scheduled, we're sharing that office with Bo, and we're happy to accommodate and try to make it work. So if you want us as a team, we could be a team also.
Right. No, we're always glad to work. It's always best. This is, you know, our mantra, but we'll work with whoever your team is, but always make sure that you're coordinating with your team, your money team, your estate team, making sure everybody knows what the other part of the team is doing. So thank you so much, Taylor. Thank you, Maya, for coming in. This, you know, number two, you know, I think we're turning her into a radio star, I think is the key. But the problem is she's got a face for television. She's too cute to be to be kept on the radio.
We'll
so
take what we can for these days.
You know, less like me, who I've been told I have a face for radio. But luckily, you know, luckily
well,
I get to do it.
Appreciate your and all the listeners' patience with her commentary.
Yeah, no worries. Well, so we'll be right back with more Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. And Matt, as we close out the show today, you know, as I often like to do, I want to leave the listeners with something that they can think about, something to think about from their perspective that applies to their situation. And because we talk about a lot of things with taxes, with, you know, estate planning, with trust planning and all this, that doesn't apply to everybody.
Right.
But one thing that does apply to everybody, we were talking a little bit in the break, is risk, right? Because when we're talking about investing, that's one of the main components you have to look at. So it's, you know, is risk, right? How much risk you're taking, you know, are we putting it all on red and spinning that roulette wheel, right? You know, the risk reward that comes with that.
I do like red. I think historically red should pay off pretty well.
It pays off better than black. And then what happens when we get double zero, right?
Uh-oh, whoops.
Right. So when we're talking about money though, you know, and investing our money and talking about risk, it's a really important conversation to have.
Right. And when I look at risk, I really look at the three levels of risk that you're taking. There's the risk that you're currently taking in your portfolio, and we have tools to measure that. Pretty simple, pretty easy to understand. Actually, to digress, we have a really simple tool that will actually put your portfolio through various stress tests, like good markets, bad markets, ugly markets, interest rate increasing markets. Just in four quick scenarios, we can see, hey, here's your portfolio. Here's how it would do in those scenarios. So there's the, we can tell you how much risk you're currently taking. And then the other risks are how much risk you want to take psychologically, how much can you handle.
Risk tolerance, right? Like seeing what, you know, how would you react? You know, and most folks have probably gone through this. And if you haven't, and you're working with a financial advisor and they have not had this conversation with you, that's a big red flag for me, right? And even if it's been a while, revisit it, talk about it, because it helps to have real life examples, right? To say, if your portfolio did this, and not just in percentage, but in cash, right? Because when you look at what your percentage, what your account size does, when you talk about, well, if your account went down 15%, how would you react? And most people say, well, that's normal, right? 15 will happen. But then when you look at, you have $1 million in your 401k and it goes down $150,000, how do you react? Because it's visceral. It's real.
Right. So those two, and then the third level of risk is the risk that you need to take to hit your long-term goals.
Right.
So to reiterate, the level of risk you're currently taking in your portfolio, the level of risk that you want to take, and then the actual risk that you need to take to accomplish your long-term financial goals. And our job, my job particularly, is to make sure that those three risk levels are identical.
And that they match up in the portfolio, right? You just mentioned, because I want to reiterate, I know I'm interrupting you, but it's very important, because you mentioned the risk you want to take, the risk that you need to take for your plan, and the risk that you are taking. And more often than not, folks, I got to tell you, when we sit down with folks and analyze their portfolio, I can't tell you how many times Matt and I have talked about, hey, I just met with this couple and they're super excited to work with us, because they did not realize, they thought they were super conservative. And we ran that stress test and said, this is what we're not saying that 2008 is happening again. We're not saying that the Great Depression is happening again. We're not saying coronavirus start of the year is happening again.
Will be perpetually bugging us for years to come.
But it might. And so you want to be prepared. If this does happen to your portfolio, are you comfortable that this is what's going to happen?
Right. So those tools are very, very helpful, because the words that investors or advisors use to talk about risk can be relative. So we say, I'm a conservative investor, I'm a middle of the road moderate investor, or I'm an aggressive investor. But what does that mean?
Right.
We actually quantify that. We put a number on it, a speed limit, if you will. Like, oh, Matt, I'm a middle of the road moderate. I'm a, you know, on a scale of 1 to 99, I'd like to be a 50.
Right.
And then we plug in the numbers to the portfolio. They might be a 35. They might be a 75. I mean, it really just aligns at least the amount of risk they're currently taking with the amount of risk that we'd like to take. And then we do a little bit more due diligence with that client to find out the level of risk that they need to take. And that's the financial plan. So that's how Bo and I work together. He handles the really deep, full financial plan. I use that plan to identify what risk target I'm shooting for. Because in my opinion, if you have enough assets to live for the rest of your life and to check all the boxes for your financial plan and to avoid all the pitfalls and get all over all the hurdles, why should we be taking an ounce more risk with your portfolio than necessary?
Yeah. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. You want to make sure that you're taking, you know, getting the most returns you can for the least amount of risk that you can. And it's not something we can control. The return part, folks, and I've talked about this over time, it is not something that we can control. What
exactly
we can control is how much risk you're taking. That's what Matt is talking about. And I've said this ad nauseum. We can't control what taxes do. We can't control what the laws change. We can't control what, you know, what Twitter does. We can't control any of that. But what we can control is how much risk we're exposing your portfolio to.
Exactly. It takes time for us to look at your financial situation as if we're looking at it through your eyes. So it can be difficult for us to kind of put your shoes on, so to speak, your glasses on, to look at your portfolio and your situation and really come up with a plan and an investment strategy that is custom tailored to you. It's a craft. And it's not just a one-time, hey, I got a custom portfolio 10 years ago. It's something that we continually are looking at, the plan and the portfolio in conjunction, to make sure that they always fit you. Because, you know, what happens to us when we buy a custom set of clothes, right? Suits, whatever. We lose weight, we gain weight, and then all of a sudden the portfolio doesn't fit us anymore.
Why'd you look at me when you said gain weight? It was rude.
It was unintentional. It was purely psychological.
Right? Freudian slip.
visual Freudian slip.
Right. Well, and I've talked about this as well, Matt, when we talked to folks about, when you think about what do you do, Chuck used to call himself the financial doctor, right? We're not doctors, but like a doctor, you need to get your portfolio checked up. You need to get your plan, have a checkup. What's the one thing? We drive a car off a lot, loses 30% of its value, but we take it in to get serviced.
Never
every 6 months.
A depreciating asset.
Right. Well, you take that car in to get serviced every 6 months. And, people will lose their minds if their little sticker from the service station says, I'm 10 miles over when it says I got to go in. Right. And your car dings and gives you a little thing. We don't have that for the portfolio. You don't have that for your financial plan. So that's what we try to put together for folks. And, I think we're in a good spot here. Anything specific you want to leave people with today, Matt? I feel like we should generate sort of maybe a segment that's Matt's final thoughts.
I'm call it get real. Get real. So the thing that I would say take away from this conversation is take that level of risk and really do an honest apples to apples comparison to your bottom line return. It's called a risk-adjusted return. If you're expecting to get stock market-like returns, but you're in cash or bonds-like investments that are generally returning less, there's a mismatch there. So it's really important to focus on risk-adjusted returns. How much return am I getting for the level of risk that I'm taking? And that's a conversation you need to kind of bring up with your financial advisor. Make sure that, hey, there's fees involved, there's different risks involved, there's my diversified portfolio and all these things. How much risk am I taking, and am I getting it the right level of return or beating the level of return for the right amount of risk? That's nice too.
Make sure you're setting those expectations for yourself and for your advisor, because they need to know where you're at. Well, Matt, that's another show, another week, another, as you get, I feel like you're a natural at this. I mean,
I really enjoy this part of the of my career. I like working with people, and I like working with numbers and investments. It's just, I truly enjoy it. It's just one of those things.
Well, that's great. So, make sure you tune in next week. If you have a question, if you have something that's been keeping you up at night, remember, there are no foolish questions when it comes to your money. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We will be back next week with more Investing Simplified.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified at pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000, or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. We'll be right back.